Good morning, and thank you all for joining us today. I am Nicholas Baines, Head of IR for Intercement. With me here today for our earnings call, or fireside chat, should I say, is Paulo Diniz, our Chief Financial Officer, and Marco Zangari, our Head of Corporate Finance and Planning. The presentation will be followed by a question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, you may send it via webcast. The presentation will be available online, and the webcast link has been provided to you in the registration email. Before we start, please note that on this call, you will hear discussions of non-IFRS financial measures, including EBITDA, adjusted EBITDA, and margins. Reconciliation of these non-IFRS measures to the most directly comparable IFRS financial measures is contained in the accompanying material that supports this call, or the annual financial report, which is available at the investor section of our website, as well as on the Singapore Exchange website. During this call, we will make forward-looking statements about events and circumstances that have not yet occurred, including outlook and projections of Intercement's operating activities and their anticipated financial impact on our business and financial results for 2021 and beyond. These statements are based on management's current expectations and actual results, and future events may differ materially due to risks and uncertainties, including those detailed from time to time in filings Intercement makes with the Singapore Exchange Commission. Intercement disclaims any obligation to update information contained in this forward-looking statement, whether because of new information, future events, or otherwise. Please refer to the Intercement second quarter 21 financial report for a basic discussion of the relevant risks and uncertainties. All public information is available on our website. And before we start, I think it's important to say that we should note some delay, given that our team is located in different locations. So now we move on. Paulo, why don't we walk through our volume performance in our different geographies for second quarter 2021?
Well, before anything, good morning to you all and pleasure to be here. Let me quick talk about our top line and also profit from the presence of Zangari here with us today. Overall, our top line was marked by volume sold of almost 4.9 million tons in the second quarter, which represented an increase of 16% over the same quarter of last year. In general, we can say that this growth reflected the ongoing recovery we have been through since COVID negative impact, including a compressed base for comparison in the second quarter of last year, especially in Argentina and South Africa. The positive dynamic for cement demand in Brazil continued in the quarter. In fact, this favorable inertia continued to shape by a larger consumer's share of wallet going into home improvement, plus strong self-construction demand, the urbanization movement, and relatively low interest rates. As a result, Intercement Brazil posted a sales volume of around 2.4 million tons, an expansion of 5% compared to the same quarter of last year. To give you some color on the different dynamics across the country, I should say that the agro region Midwest and the South region continue to present a more favorable growth dynamic, whereas the Southeast, the largest regional market, saw the three largest players activating queues and production lines that were hibernated. Northeast is a region that presented a milder growth compared to the other regions, as it's also the region with the highest number of cement players. But again, overall performance very, very satisfactory. Crossing the border to our neighboring Hermanos in Argentina, the recovery inertia verified in the first quarter of this year continue in the second, reaching volumes above pre-pandemic level. Macroeconomic conditions, especially high inflation, tight FX controls, and economic uncertainties, continue to drive consumers' behavior to allocate any savings left into real assets, that is, construction sector. Although bond market remained on a timid pace, the private sector has been able to back construction activity solid growth. In fact, Luma Negra registered sales of 1.4 million tons in the quarter, an expansion of 39% over the same period of last year, which was impacted by the pandemic, and also interest that this represented a 5% increase when compared to the second quarter of 2019, pre-pandemic period. Moving to the other side of the Atlantic, let me ask Zangari to chime in and drive us through the top line of our African operations. Zangari?
Yes, thanks, Paulo. Good morning, everyone. And yes, let's go on now speaking about our operations in Africa. Starting with Egypt, where despite still at a challenging competitive environment and after sequential quarters of declining volumes, we got good news as our operation increased volumes by 13% when compared to second quarter last year. This improved dynamic was mostly driven by regional resumption of small medium scale construction activities backlogged from the previous quarter. On the other hand, in Mozambique, after solid recovery in volumes since mid-2020, our operation, Cimentos de Moçambique, posted a 15% year-on-year decline in volumes as competitive landscape has changed with the entrance of a new player in the southern region of the country. Last but definitely not least, in South Africa, cement industry remained on a solid recovery path, bouncing back from material declines 1 year ago due to COVID-19 lockdown. Volumes have been recovering well, and important to note, bulk market, which was especially compressed last year, has been showing positive signals in recent quarters. So, as a consequence, our operations, MPC, posted a 57% increase when compared to the second quarter 2020, period in which our volumes dropped materially due to severe lockdowns in the geography. Paulo, that would be a quick snapshot on African operations volumes.
Yeah, well, just perfect, Zangadi. And many thanks for showing us the different dynamics in the Africa arena. Therefore, to sum up, as I mentioned before, consolidated volumes remained on its positive trend and up 16%, reaching 4.9 million tons, supported by interesting market dynamics in our two main markets, Brazil and Argentina.
Great, Paulo and Zangari. It seems that the two main interesting markets, I mean Brazil and Argentina, continue to perform well. Now, moving to pricing dynamics during the quarter, we saw once again that the currency of these two countries posted material devaluation when compared to the same quarter of last year. How has it affected prices and revenue, Paulo?
Yes, correct, Nick. Our sales of 4.9 million tons translated into $370 million, an amount 49% higher than the second quarter of last year. If one considers only our continued operations as we divested our assets in Paraguay. Naturally, that last year was highly affected by the COVID context, including some lockdowns. This revenue expansion was driven mostly by solid performance in Brazil and Argentina and relevant recovery in South Africa. And these two countries in the southern cone of America, Brazil, and Argentina were under significant currency depreciation from the second quarter of last year to the second quarter of this year. Brazilian reais devaluated 10%, while pesos argentinos depreciated 36%. Meanwhile, South Africa rand appreciated 11% when compared to the second quarter of last year. Therefore, in a theoretical scenario of a stable dollar parity, the top line would have expanded by 60%. Looking at our African operations, which accounted for around 20% of our total volume, all the three geographies have posted increasing prices in local currency and in dollar terms. South Africa saw prices to raise above 10% in local currency and even stronger in dollar terms given the rand appreciation in the period. Pricing dynamics were benefited by the bounce back of the demand, including the bulk market recovery. Meanwhile, in Egypt, after a long time of declining prices, we finally saw a slight price increase in local terms, helped by a positive signs of market expansion. In Mozambique, prices were slightly up in local terms in comparison to a year ago, however lower than in the first quarter. In Argentina, our controlled company, Luma Negra, contributed with 30% of our consolidated volume. Prices continued to recover in dollar terms after a significant drop in 2020, raising to $91 per ton in the second quarter of this year, contributing to a strong top-line growth, 41% up in dollar terms. Finally, in Brazil, InterCement Brazil represented 50% of our total volume sold in the quarter. Prices in local terms were materially up when compared to the second quarter of last year. Pricing dynamic in Brazil market remained on a healthy trending, backed by structural changes in the Brazilian cement industry, as players became more rational after years and years of losses. Utilization rates went up, and the spare capacity in the industry is now basically in the hands of the three largest players. Additionally, in case of InterCement Brazil, our revised go-to-market strategy continued to provide a better balancing between the micro and meso regions in the country, between distributors and retailers, and also between ready-mix and construction companies. As a result, InterCement Brazil revenues expanded by 65% in Brazilian reais, while raising 55% in dollar terms, despite the real depreciation.
Great, Paulo. Good news on price recovery in Africa and fantastic performance of the top line in South America. It seems that the new running rate in Brazil and Argentina are being confirmed. And Paulo, considering the great focus in recent years on costs and productivity optimization, how this revenue performance has translated into EBITDA generation?
That's right. But careful here because we have to factor in energy costs on this equation. To start, let me exclude the impact of our discontinued operations in Paraguay from our cost base. So, our total cash cost base, including expenses, variable, and fixed costs, totally $252 million, a 21% increase in comparison to the second quarter of last year. Considering total cash cost per ton, it raised 5% on a year-on-year basis. As I was starting to anticipate, this cost increase was mostly derived from fuel costs, as petcoke price has skyrocketed in the last 12 months, more than doubling from the second quarter of last year to the second quarter of this year. In addition to that, costs associated with the import of fuel have also increased, given the international freight costs have also been surging in recent quarters. Nevertheless, one factor that helps to mitigate such pressure on costs is the use of alternative fuels, such as tires, biomass, and urban waste, known as coprocessing in the industry. In Brazil, for example, our plants used alternative fuels for around 25% of the total thermal energy needed. On the top of that, very important to highlight that the operational leverage effect from the recovery in the top line is brutal. As I mentioned before, top line expanded by around 50% while total cash costs grew 20%, leading to a material EBITDA expansion of 115% to reach $109 million in the quarter. And even more important, EBITDA margin was at 29.5%, a jump of 80 percentage points when compared to the same quarter of last year. And Nick, I always like to reinforce that I do see our recent quarters as a recovery period and not as a growth phase. Our two main operations, Brazil and Argentina, have been pushing that recovery. Brazil, the greatest contributor, with an adjusted EBITDA expansion of almost $28 million in the quarter, to $49 million, up 130% when compared to the second quarter of 2020, and a solid EBITDA margin of 33%. While in Argentina, despite the macroeconomic uncertainties still present, our controlled operation Luma Negra has been able to register an adjusted EBITDA of $41 million, a 79% growth in comparison to the same quarter of last year, implying an EBITDA margin of 31%.
Right, Paulo, and I may jump in and say we also had a material recovery in South Africa as well. It recovered from a tough second quarter last year and increased its EBITDA by more than $7 million in the quarter. Definitely a strong bounce back after COVID impact last year, making it the greatest contributor to our EBITDA growth in Africa in this quarter. So, Paulo, as you said before, after so many efforts on costs, optimization, industrial efficiencies, and footprint reviews, now the positive impact from operational leverage is very clear and sound. Moving now to the components below EBITDA, such as working capital and CapEx, can you briefly comment on these cash moves?
Yes, certainly. Well, fluctuation in operational assets and liabilities was at $50 million in the quarter, so as part of our seasonal path, but improving from the level of last quarter. Basically, usually the industry has lower volumes sold in the first half of the year in the South Hemisphere, requiring us more cash to rebuild inventories as production level remains at a constant pace throughout the quarters, despite lower sales volume compared to the second half. In addition to that, we also had some opportunistic petcoke purchases in Brazil that amounted for around $15 million and aimed to optimize the cost of fuel. CapEx, totally $40 million in the quarter as Lamalie project entered into its final phase with the Q commission in June, and mill and packing line is under commission now and are planned to be fully operational by the end of September. Important to note that on these two components, working capital and CapEx, the comparison with the second quarter of last year turns a little bit misleading, if I may say that, given that the last year we were under COVID initial outbreak and pandemic uncertainties, that led to a primary focus on preserving cash. Zangari, may I pass the ball to you now to comment on our financing flows and position during this quarter?
Yes, great idea, Paulo. I believe it would be good to start with a refresh on our debt refinancing back in June 2020. As some of you may recall, we refinanced our debenture back in the second quarter of last year, pushing the bulk of the amortizations for 2023 or beyond. Thus, this year, in the second quarter of 2021, we had minor amortizations in the operating companies, mostly related to working capital lines, summing up $17 million. Moreover, on the refinancing, we turned the debentures into Brazilian reais, translating 60% of our total debt to be denominated in Brazilian reais, making it more adherent to our revenues. Therefore, as a consequence, Brazilian reais variation plays now a bigger role on debt evolution in US dollar terms. Other factors that also contributed positively in the second quarter of this year were lower level of total debt and lower interest rates in the period. So to sum up, we ended the quarter with a cash position of $177 million and net debt at $1,450 million. Which has increased a bit from last quarter due to the Brazilian reais appreciation from the first to the second quarter of this year. Then financial leverage decreased to 3.3 times now from 3.8 times in the last quarter of 2020 and 4.9 times in the second quarter of last year. Therefore, the deleveraging trend remains in place.
Yes, Ganga. Clear deleveraging trends in recent quarters. And Paulo, can we expect the trend to continue on operational side? We know, and we all know that interest rates do not provide any quantitative guidance, but maybe you could share very briefly and in a qualitative aspect your view for the rest of the year.
Well, let me point out some drivers that are shaping our view for the rest of the year. Starting with Brazil, there is no doubt that uncertainties about the political and economic situation will remain. Moreover, we cannot forget that the second half of last year was a great half as we materialized the pent-up demand paralyzed by the COVID in the first half of last year. Therefore, we see a second half of this year very, very similar to the second half of last year in terms of volume. Current level price should be sustained as the energy costs are hurting many players that needed to defend margins. However, more important than that is the fact that regardless of who will be the next president of Brazil in October of next year, the construction industry will continue to be a key industry for the country, and that, of course, includes cement. Therefore, we continue to be optimistic with regards to the overall market trend for the coming years, although we may have a path that includes a roller coaster. But the trend is up. A similar conclusion is valid for Argentina. We may face some uncertainties from the economic and political front, especially now with the coming regional elections in October, but the ongoing recovery in the construction industry is unquestionable, reinforced by the local mindset that the real estate is the best proxy for hard currency. In summary, we should have a great second half in Luma Negra. Africa may present some mixed signs. It seems that
Paulo, sorry to interrupt you, but we were known that people said that the connection line it's fair, maybe unstable, so people are not hearing us. So let me just check here if people can hear us, the connection, and I let you know just a second.
Well, let me know when to proceed and comment on Africa.
Well, Paulo, I think you can go on.
Okay,
Connection
so
was reestablished. Thank you.
okay, we are all set. Okay, so with regards to Africa, so the continent, our operations may present that there are some mixed signals. It seems that the recovery path in South Africa shall continue. Yes, we may face some surprises, like last month that our company had to stop activities for 7 days when protesters in the country became violent, aiming to defend the previous president. However, these are punctual events that should not change the health trend that we see. The other two African countries seem to be changing positions. While in Egypt, we are starting to see some light at the end of the tunnel coming from the market discipline recently imposed by the government with the production quota system. In Mozambique, we had the entry of a Chinese player, Dugongo, that dropped price dramatically in order to penetrate the market. Therefore, we have many question marks in front of us in that country, pointing to a difficult second half. Overall, if Intercement booked an adjusted EBITDA of $320 million in 2020, this year, when we factor in all these variables, we are confident that the company should be able to reach an adjusted EBITDA well over $400 million, marking 2021 as the recovery year for Intercement.
Yes, well, Paulo and Zangari, we're going through all the highlights of the second quarter this year. Another great quarter. I guess it's a very good moment to open the floor now for some questions from our investors, analysts, and bankers. Please go ahead. And I would like to remember all that if you'd like to ask a question, you may send it via webcast. Well, we have a first question that's a question that's commonly made in the conference calls is regarding the cash position at the end of the quarter by perimeter, by region. So we can say that we ended the second quarter of this year with around $30 million in Argentina, around $70 million in Intercement Brazil, around $35 million in African operations, and above $40 million in the hold costs. Well, I believe that the next question you can go through. I can read it here and then you can answer. The question is regarding the leverage ratio that the company targets in the longer term. And if this leverage climbs quickly, would the company still be pursuing an IPO for Brazilian business? And if so, why? What would be the rationale for that?
Well, very good question, Mike. Yeah, you properly said, I guess the deleveraging pace is very, very quick. However, I guess that we have learned with Luma Negra in Argentina that having a kind of a, global think but acting local with a responsiveness and accountability really plays a huge role in our operations. Therefore, yes, we continue to target, to float the Brazilian operation. However, I guess that we do not see the need to float, 49% as we planned before. I guess that we are going to be reducing that percentage dramatically, and at the same time, making sure that we can build out another strong operation here in Brazil. And of course, and by doing that, we are going to be deleveraging the whole group even more. So I guess that this is the kind of rationale. I mean, there are many other points involved in this strategy, but in a lump sum, we still want to have a more balanced capital structure, in not only in terms of our Brazilian operation that we target leverage ratio of companies that do have a kind of investment grade rate, so around 2x max. I guess that with the IPO of our Brazilian operation, I guess the whole group on a consolidated basis could be driving into this mark very, very quickly. So this is basically the rationale as we speak at this point in time.
Yeah, great. And the next question from Samuel, it's similar. You already mentioned that the idea would be pursuing a lower stake in the IPO. And Samuel's question is regarding about would we pursuing IPO this year or the early next year? And if not, what would be alternative plan to reduce cost?
Yeah, Samuel, thanks for the question. Yeah, I guess that we do have some other financial, let's say, steps in our overall financing strategy. But for sure, when we put them all together, no doubt that the one that would bring the best benefit for the company itself and for the whole Intersummit Group is the IPO of the Brazilian subsidiary. Therefore, there's no rush in order to pursue it. However, we are going to make sure that the company is going to be ready for any window we believe is the right one. What we are not going to be doing is to give up any value for the company, dropping the valuation, because again, I guess that we have a unique asset in our hands, and we do know the proper value of the company. But the plans are basically to continue to pursue this path, because there's no liquidity pressure in any other front that should demand our action intent in order to change this path.
Okay, so I'd like to do a final reminder that if you'd like to ask a question, you may send it via webcast. And if not, we can conclude the call. I guess, Paulo and Zangari, we had a very insightful morning.
Well, yes, absolutely. Very great chat, Nick. And it will be great to come back. Thank you.
Nick and Zangin also enjoyed our fireside chat as well. Thank you all. And also, please, as our company is being able to demonstrate our recovery path, showing our strengths, skills, and competence to execute our strategy. I guess that's all on my side. Let me thank you all for being with us and have a great day. Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, the conference is now over. Thank you for joining today and have a pleasant day. Goodbye.